everyone. I'm Manar Adli, founder and director of Mint Press News. 6 months of Israeli bombardment has taken its toll on both Palestine and its diaspora population. Even though the genocidal Israeli onslaught has shocked the world with over 25,000 deaths, few in the world of arts and entertainment have been brave enough to speak up against what is going on. But one of those people is American-Palestinian fashion designer and model Alana Hadid, who has tirelessly used her platform to raise awareness and attention to the ongoing Israeli attacks against Palestine, Palestinian history, and their plight against occupation, colonialism, and apartheid. Alana, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, your grandparents were expelled from their home by people who planned their expulsion well in advance. Could you tell us about your family's story?
Yeah, I say they planned for their expulsion well in advance because the expulsion of Palestinians was planned well before 1948. My grandparents lived in Safed with my aunts before my grandfather or before my father was born. My grandfather was a university professor and an interpreter, and he had gone to work while my grandmother was giving birth to my father in Nazareth with her family. When he came home from work, the Polish family who had been living with them in their home was occupying the home with the help of a militia. I don't know at this point if it was the Irgun or Haganah, but they were a militant group who were considered terrorists who later became the IDF. He was expelled from his home with just what they left basically on the curb for him. He had my one aunt with him. They went to a refugee camp. My grandmother, my father, who was about 9 days old at the time, and his two sisters went to a separate refugee camp, and it was many months before they were reunited. So it was a pretty traumatic and violent story of how they were expelled from their home in 1948.
So what is Israel's problem with the Hadid family? I've seen images of Israeli missiles ready to be used to bomb Gaza with Bella and Gigi's names on those missiles. Talk to me about that.
I think Israel fears all Palestinians. Our existence is resistance. The people coming out and saying that they're Palestinian is a threat to the state of Israel. It is a reminder to people to look into what happened in 1948 and 1967. It is a reminder that Palestinians are occupied. They have been militarily occupied, violently occupied for 75 years. Our existence is a reminder to the world that Palestine exists.
Is it easy to speak out against genocide and for Palestinian freedom while being in the world of fashion? I mean, what sort of barriers and penalties do you face for doing so in your industry? Or have people been supportive of what you've been saying?
I mean, I think it's sad that it's so hard to speak out against genocide, to say human life is valuable and that we should be protecting it. That shouldn't be something that's controversial, but apparently when it comes to Palestinians and Arabs in general, it is. It's been, you know, made to be that way. It's intentionally that way. It's intentionally hard for people to speak out. And, you know, AIPAC, the ADL, J Street, they have done their job to try to make it very hard, especially in America, to do that. But myself, I've put myself in a situation where I work with brands and people who I know align with my values. And yes, I have, you know, said goodbye to a lot of people who I considered friends or colleagues that I thought aligned with my values. And I realized through a genocide of my people did not. But I don't consider that a loss. I consider myself incredibly blessed that I work for myself. I make my own decisions on who I work with. There are very many people who don't sit in the same position as I do and are on gag orders about the murder and targeted killing of Palestinians.
That leads me to ask you the next question, which is, have people you know in the fashion or celebrity scene been in support of you in Palestine, but chose to stay silent?
I think a lot of people do that. And I you know, I truly can't blame everyone for being afraid, but at a certain point, enough is enough. We are going on 6 months of this atrocity happening, and I can't imagine, no matter where in the world this was happening, being silent, especially with a lot of these people having large platforms and voices of expression and considering themselves artists and creatives. I feel like the human condition is what we create from, and to see the massive suffering of a people, but also the collective sorrow of the world, and not wanting to talk about that is a tragedy and a travesty.
What is your reaction to the liberal feminist celebrities who claim to support women's rights, or even mental health celebrities like Jay Shetty, who support mental health, but don't mention or use their platforms to talk about the women and children of Palestine who've been subjected to rape by the IDF and incessant bombs?
I think there's been a universal whitewashing and kind of one-way streeting of feminism, mental health, human rights, civil rights, all of these things. There's been so much amazing collective solidarity, and yet there's also this universal whitewashing of these different things. You know, speaking out about women's rights when talking about the debunked rapes of Israeli women, but not talking about what's happening to Palestinian women. You know, not talking about the lack of health care for Palestinian women, the lack of anesthesia during C-sections or childbirth, not talking about Palestinian girls starving. That type of feminism, the one way feminism, is just not, it's not progressive. It's not liberal. It's ridiculous. And I've seen the same thing with mental health. There's a conversation about how are you taking care of your mental health during this time, but not addressing what this time is. What is this time? Is it a genocide of Palestinians? Let's say those words out loud and be really real about what's going on in the world, and not just passing over the reality to get to the end result. And I've seen that in so many different on so many different platforms, this kind of, I mean, they're doing it in the press as well, but this kind of move past what is going on to the people are dying. What are we doing now?
What is your reaction to Erin Bushnell's extreme form of protest?
It was very hard to see what Erin Bushnell did. It was also, and I don't say this to say that I believe that everyone should be self-immolating. I think that it's such an extreme form of protest, but it was also the way in which he used his privilege with the knowledge that he was a United States airman and a white man living in America to draw attention to what was happening in Palestine and imperialism and the empire and colonialism all in one action was awe-inspiring and also tragic and horrific. And I think he knew that at this point, when we're going on 6 months, that there's not a lot that, you know, we are being desensitized and we are experiencing horrors every day, and we are being told that that is normal. And that's just what he was speaking to. And that is not normal. And if that's what you're going to say is normal, then self-immolation could be considered a normal form of protest to what the United States is and Israel and the UK and so many other countries are supporting. Again, I want to say I've seen so many instances of self-immolation throughout history. This one was specific and horrifying. I don't want people to follow in his footsteps, but at the same time, I want to give reverence for what he did and what a sacrifice it was for Palestine. And I just recently read what he wrote in his will, that he wanted his ashes scattered in Palestine if we would have him. And I think that's beautiful. And I'd like to say that when there is a free Palestine, I would definitely love to help scatter his ashes there.
It's been interesting watching and hearing the media framing of Aaron's protest. What has your reaction been to the way the media has framed his extreme act of protest as a mental health issue?
This is always what happens when a protest, no matter whether or not it's peaceful or violent or, self-inflicted, there's always, if it doesn't fit within the narrative, there's always this conversation around mental health or terrorism. I think he knew that as a United States airman, he, with security clearance, he had gone through mental health screenings. You have to go through mental health screenings to receive the security clearances that he had, also to enter the military and to continue in the military. So I think he was well aware of what he had gone under to prove that he was not mentally ill. And I think he was using that as a privilege to not allow these narrative shifts to happen. And there's not very many other jobs or professions that you could do that would be that well vetted in that regard. So we know he was a patriot. We know he was not a terrorist. We know that he cared very deeply for others, and we know that he was not mentally ill. And I think that that is one of the reasons why he knew he was one of the only people who would push away all of those narrative shifts.
As a Palestinian American, have you noticed any shift in American public opinion on Israel in Palestine?
I think that people are opening their eyes and they're being educated. And it's thanks to so many brave people on the ground, Bassam, Motaz, Hind, all of these people who have put their lives on the line. And many of them, you know, I think we're at 126 journalists in Gaza have been targeted and killed. They put their lives on the line. They put themselves in grave danger to show the world what was really happening on the ground, because Israel will not allow international journalists into Gaza to show the world the truth. So they had to do it themselves. And they've done such a beautiful and harrowing job of showing the world what's going on. And I do think that public opinion in America is shifting. I do think I think the numbers right now are above 60% of Americans support a ceasefire. It's really a testament to governments don't always represent their people. And right now, our government is not representing us at all. The numbers for people who want a ceasefire just keep climbing. People have an understanding of what a ceasefire means, that a ceasefire means no more firing for anyone, that the only time, if you care about the hostages, the only time that there has been hostage releases has been during that brief ceasefire. We need a ceasefire for so many different reasons. And I think the United States and Americans are not just worried about what the effect is on our ally. They're understanding that we are not on the right side of history here.
And on that point, do you think Biden's steadfast support for Israel is harming his chances of re-election? I mean, is he at risk of losing support from young Americans and from Muslim Americans as well?
He isn't at risk. He is losing support. Biden is losing support from not just the Muslim community or the Arab community or the young community, but the Americans as a whole do not trust him anymore. They do not think that he values human life. To continue to arm a genocide is to say to people, I care more about my alliance with Israel than I do about human life. And he is saying that. He's also said that that to have Trump as president again would be very detrimental to our democracy. And so in doing this, in disregarding the will of his people, he is also putting the United States in peril of losing its ability to be a democracy, because he is not allowing people to support him or support the Democratic Party in opposition of Donald Trump. So I think that he, on multiple different levels, is losing this election and also losing his ability to govern this country.
Well, I do have a feeling that we are going to be pressured to vote Democrat so Trump doesn't get into office, and we're going to be getting bombarded with that kind of messaging. So what about voting for a third party or boycotting the election altogether?
Well, I think people need to look into third parties, Green Party, and, you know, to vote independent. There are other people running for president. It's not just Donald Trump and Joe Biden and, you know, obviously Nikki Haley and these other people. But Donald Trump and Joe Biden are not your only options. There are so many other countries that function with multi-party systems. We are like one of the only developed democracies that still has two parties. I think that we need to really see what our options are. Our votes matter. We can see that our votes matter. We know how much they pander to us when we're in an election year. So if our votes matter, we should be giving our votes and using our votes, like the way Michigan has in the primary. What a phenomenal thing that they've done. I applaud them for really showing up and showing how important their votes are. I refuse to vote for a president who supports the genocide of Palestinians or any people. So there's not a possibility for me to vote for Joe Biden. Does that mean that I want to vote for Donald Trump? No, I also don't think that he will benefit the world or America at large. I think that there are some other people that are running for president who have come out and support a ceasefire and supported Palestinians from the beginning. I'm looking into those other parties. I'm looking into those other candidates. And I think other people should do that too.
Alana, you've dedicated your page now to drawing awareness to the genocide. What has your social media experience been like and the reaction of people online to your posts?
My social media experience has been very interesting. I think I've been shadow banned for about 3 years now, but the shadow ban is real, and it's happening, and it's happening to me and so many other people who are supporting Palestine and who are calling out anything having to do with this genocide. Merely saying the word genocide, or writing out the word Palestine, or talking about anything political, is being shadow banned, especially on Meta platforms. And it's been really hard to disseminate the message. And we're working on ways to, you know, circumvent the algorithm and to collaborate with each other so that we can get more information out there. But there's really a system in place to silence people who want to speak out about the atrocities that are happening in the world, especially the ones that are supported by the United States. Social media has been crazy. And my DMs are apparently where Zionists come to say the most heinous things they possibly can. But my strategy is to block and move on. Those are not people who care to be educated, who want to learn, or who have any empathy or humanity whatsoever. So I block and I move on.
Well, and I think people would want to know, have you experienced any online bullying from pro-Israel accounts? I mean, have you or your family been doxxed because of your social media presence?
I think the beginning of I think around, you know, the last few weeks of October, my number was doxxed. It was, I think, on an Israeli Telegram channel. It went everywhere. People were putting it on their Instagram pages. I was getting phone calls all the time. I've obviously since changed my number and taken several precautions. I've been doxxed. I've been threatened. I've had, you know, all sorts of messages. Again, I don't encourage online bullying, but when in this regard, I know the reason why they're doing it is to try to silence me, and it only fuels my fire to continue to speak out and speak loudly, because I know just for the same reason that international journalists are not allowed into Gaza during this genocide, the truth, it will set us free. And to continue to speak about the realities and the truth on the ground is what they are most scared of. So I have said it many times. I consider all of this a badge of honor, a true badge of honor, that I am saying something that scares, the Zionist regime.
My final question to you, Alana, is what do you think a just solution to all of this would look like? And can it happen without a sea of change in the outlook and actions of the U.S. government that keeps preventing a ceasefire from taking place?
I think justice and a just solution right now would be a permanent and sustained ceasefire, an end to the occupation of Palestine, and a return of Palestinian land and the right of return for Palestinians. I think that's justice. I think one of the reasons why the United States has supported Israel for so long is because it is really its only avenue or foothold in the Middle East, and it really has nothing to do with Israel as a country or what it represents. But it represents colonialism, and the United States is a colonial country. We're an imperialist country, and so it's a representative of those same interests in the Middle East, as we've been, you know, trying to contain the Middle East for a very long time, and suck it of all of its resources. So I think one of the things that needs to happen is the end of the empire, the end of colonialism, the end of imperialism, and, you know, real state sovereignty for people, real ability to govern themselves, and the end to the United States policing the world, because obviously they're not policing it very well enough.